Hey everybody, I'm Liz Nolly.
I'm Carrie Thomas.
And welcome to the Just Us Podcast, a place for Black women navigating corporate spaces. Please, if you like what you see, please be sure to stay to the end, like, share, and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, or all your favorite podcast platforms, and support us. Help keep the show on the air by shopping the store on my TikTok page or at LizThePurposeCoach.com.
/store. Hey, Liz.
Hey, Carrie.
We have an interesting topic today, so I don't want to hold this up because I really want to get into it. I think it's something that a lot of people who are in corporate America, or I should say a lot of people of color in corporate America, struggle with, and we have to talk about it. So let's start with a readout.
Okay. All right. Trigger warning ahead, just so y'all know. This one comes from a reader, and she writes, "Dear Liz and Carrie, I need help putting words to something I've been wrestling with for most of my career. How do you not lose your Blackness and still be corporate?" I told y'all there was a trigger warning. I tried to warn y'all.
Listen, we got to talk about it.
We got to talk about it. This is a big one, particularly for earlier career professionals.
Yeah.
She continues, "I am a Black woman working in a professional, mostly white environment. I've learned the rules, how to speak in meetings, how to write emails, how to, quote, show up in ways that feel safe and acceptable." Oof, acceptable. Yikes, that word just triggered me.
We'll come back to that word.
Yeah, we'll revisit that. Let me just try to get through this letter if I can. Woo! Woo! Okay. All right, I need
Liz
my,
is triggered.
I need my Dr. King church fan right now because I'm having a moment, but let me get back into it.
Woman, untrigger thyself.
for real. Whew, okay, she continues. "On paper, I'm doing everything right. I'm respected. I'm progressing. I'm often told I'm so polished or so articulate." Whew, okay. For all the other folks out here watching, don't ever tell somebody who looks like me or my co-host, you're so articulate or you speak so well. That is nobody's compliment.
Do you know, I saw on social media just the other day, someone said, a person of color said, "Well, I don't see what's wrong with telling someone that they speak well or that they're articulate. I think it's a compliment."
Wait, you're friends with Candace Owens, hon? I'm sorry.
How dare you?
My bad.
How dare you?
I mean, I don't know who else would say something like that.
Someone.
That's crazy work. That's crazy.
Because it's such a history of using that to pit us against each other to make the person who is quote unquote articulate filled acceptable, back to that word, in the eyes of mainstream America.
Exactly. And
I'm getting riled up already.
Not only that, I find it insulting.
It is insulting.
Like, why is articulate something that you're so surprised that we would be? Like, for myself, I have a master's degree. I ought to be articulate.
Right.
I work hard for it. You know, like,
articulate comes with it.
Ever since they made it legal to teach my people how to read, we've been articulate. I don't understand. Like,
what?
But why is it? I told y'all about the trigger warning. We got to put like a warning label all over. I know it is, but I told y'all I was going to be triggered this episode. But I find that to be horrendously insulting. Like,
yeah.
It's such an insulting thing because would you ever say that to a person, to a clear person, to a non-Black person? Would you ever say, "Oh, You're so articulate. You speak so what? Like,
well, how would you expect me to speak?
Okay, let me get back. Let me. Okay, reclaiming my spirit
but
and
lately.
My time. Okay, she goes on to say, but lately I've been asking myself at what cost. I code switch constantly. I'm trying to get through this letter, Carrie.
There's a lot of things in here.
It's a lot. I filter my tone, my facial expressions, my humor, even my hair choices. Girl, okay, time out for Black conversation. Okay, I think twice before reacting naturally because I don't want to be labeled as aggressive, emotional, or unprofessional. That angry Black woman. Ooh wee. Mm-hmm. I've become so good at fitting in that sometimes I don't recognize myself at work.
I hate that.
I'm so glad she's here, though. That's why we're here, sis. We got you. The thing is, she says, I don't want to choose between being successful and being myself. I don't want to feel like my culture, my voice, or my lived experience has to be checked at the door in order to thrive. But I also need my job. I need stability. I need to move forward in my career without becoming a cautionary tale. So my question is this. I don't know if I can handle the question, Carrie.
Right. How much we got to get to before we get to the actual question.
Like, but my question is this. How do you stay authentically Black in corporate spaces that weren't built with you in mind without putting a target on your back? Is there a way to do both? Or is this just the price of admission? Signed, too corporate to be free, too Black to be neutral.
Let me say one thing before we start. The price of admission is the work that you do to keep your job.
Namaste.
That is the only price you pay.
That part.
And then you get paid for it.
For real, for real.
That's it.
That's the price of admission.
There's no price of admission.
That's your degrees, your training, your experience. She talks about lived experience, your training.
That's it.
Like, you earn your way into that.
Right.
That's the price of admission.
Not all the other stuff, not how you show up, not how you wear your hair, not the clothes you wear to some extent. I mean, you're not going to come in there with your pajamas on. Like, that's, you know what I mean?
That's the part, right? What,
yeah.
What you just said. Like, so here's what I tell my coaching clients.
Mm-hmm.
Job out there, I don't care what it is. I don't care what it is. Has a uniform.
Right.
Some of your uniforms got your name on it and come with a hat and whatever and a vest or whatever. But some of it is a shirt and tie. Some of it's a skirt and blouse. Some of it, like, but every job has a dress code or a uniform.
Yeah.
But putting the uniform on doesn't change who you are fundamentally.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of us, as particularly, because I struggled with this earlier in my career. I don't struggle with it at all today, but earlier in my career, I struggled with it. But we have to learn that there's a difference between shape-shifting to fit in or like wearing the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get into what the mask is and wearing the uniform. Like, the mask is like hiding or diminishing yourself or, you know, shielding yourself or hiding yourself. There's a difference between doing that and putting the uniform on to earn your keep. Like, you wouldn't want your surgeon to come in there in a clown costume. Like, it does,
right.
It just wouldn't inspire confidence. You wouldn't. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a uniform that everybody wears no matter what. And just because you put that uniform on, you don't have to diminish yourself in order to do that.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And the other thing I would tell my good sister here is, I'm trying to keep it together.
Take your time.
Because I left my Dr. King church fan at home.
your time.
Okay. You have to know the rules of your workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's appropriate? You know, some workplaces are very casual. Some are very business and buttoned up. And there's everything in between, right? So understand what the rules are and what's acceptable in your, what the uniform of your workplace is, mm-hmm. and then take the liberty and the freedom to express yourself within the confines with of those guardrails. Like, the guardrails are there to maintain however that organization defines a level of professionalism and appropriateness. That's what defines the appropriateness, not your quote-unquote blackness. So, right. You know, and, you know, but I understand her comments around her blackness, because we as black women are the only population in America.
We get questions.
Like, where they had to pass, like, what is it, federal legislation
yeah.
to regulate our bodies at work to say that it was okay that we could, you
in
know.
In the 90s. I worked for a small private PR company
mm-hmm.
that will be familiar to you.
Okay.
And I, you know, back then I used to wear my hair braided.
Mm-hmm.
I used to wear like the thick cornrows, like in a bun in the back. It was very beautiful, a professional looking style.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would wear the box braids, and, you know, usually they were like up in a ponytail or something.
Right.
I was getting ready to go to a medical conference, and the owner of the company and his wife took me to lunch, because this was going to be my first time in this professional setting. And they wanted to give me guidance. So you know where this story is going.
Wow.
Some of the guidance was on the appropriate ways to wear my hair, the appropriate clothes to wear, as if I had no clue what a professional would look like. The appropriate colors to put on my nails if I was going to wear nail polish.
Wow. They got yeah. that micro with it.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Which led me to believe, like, they're clocking every single thing that we do when we come in there. They're looking at every ounce of us, the way we wear our hair, what color eyeglasses we're wearing from day to day, the shoes we wear, everything.
That's where, like, the Crown Act and all of that kind of legislation came from. Like, our bodies are policed like that.
Yeah. So I get that there's a uniform that we have to wear, but the uniform only goes so far, and everything outside of that is up to you and who you are.
100%.
And they can't tell you, you can't do this or you can't do that, because that is inappropriate completely.
And I'll see that insult and raise you an injury.
Call.
I had the same conversation back when I lived in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for a big company
yeah.
out there. Almost verbatim conversation, except for it was a senior woman who looked like us that pulled me to the side. And at the
those are the worst kind.
And at the same time, at the time, I wore my hair in a short natural.
Mm-hmm. I remember. Mm-hmm.
And that was before short naturals were things.
Yeah.
But that was just how I wore my hair.
I was going to say, like, you've always worn your hair that way.
This
is the longest it's been in a while.
This is a 2.0 era right. thing. This isn't like forever, ever. I wore my hair in a short natural. And before I got to college in the mid 80s, I wore my hair in a short natural.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just being me, because I didn't know how else to be.
Right.
And she told me that my hair was inappropriate for the workplace, and I should consider getting extensions or whatever. And or
wow.
Until I could grow it out to wear it long and straight, because it wasn't appropriate for the workplace. Now, I didn't ask for this insight. She wasn't in HR. She had been with the company for a long time, and she actually thought she was helping me, you know, sister to sister kind of thing. And fast forward to the TV show that inspired my t-shirt today.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I saw that episode of when Kyle on Living Single, shout out to the whole cast of Living Single. Thank you all for your collective service and for representing us.
Yeah.
Like I saw myself in that show, especially the episode with Goldie at the club. When I tell you that was my life, but I digress.
Yes, please.
The episode that's relevant to this conversation
is Kyle Barker.
Was Kyle Barker when his boss, who was black, mm-hmm. told him that his braids, his cowrie shell, his mud cloth, and all of his whole Afrocentric swag and connection to his heritage and how he represented that just organically. That's just who he is. And everything was inappropriate, that he had to tone that down and be a little bit more Brooks Brothers than, you know, to get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle struggled with that the entire episode. I was like, oh my gosh, I had the same conversation as you, like with one of my coworkers that was senior to me and everything. And then what I loved about that episode was he gets to the point where he stands up to everybody else is white except for this black dude who told him that he needed to tone down his quote unquote blackness to be promoted. And he gives this beautiful soliloquy, monologue, you know, defense about why he was authentic, why he wasn't going to lose his authenticity, even if it cost him his promotion.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody else in the room was like, okay. And they just moved on. Like it wasn't a big
deal. Went on with their life.
It was so not a big deal. But to us, it was. And I thought that was so powerful and so artful because a lot of times it's, now I'm not, okay, let me say this. There are people like the lovely couple that ran your PR agency who are well-intentioned.
They were a lovely couple.
You know,
but unaware.
Right. But they're well-intentioned.
They're well-intended,
but different. You know, like,
right.
You know, but they don't realize where, like, the harm that they're causing
mm-hmm.
because it comes from a place. They wanted you to be successful. They want, you know, like, I don't think it came from a horrible place.
Success doesn't come on their terms. My success doesn't come on their terms.
Exactly.
And, so,
but it hits different when it's us having that conversation.
It does. So now let me ask you this. For Kyle's manager, as well as the woman who you had the conversation with, we are talking about being yourself in the work environment. Do you think that they were being true to themselves?
That's the thing. I don't think so. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why. Because Kyle was authentically Kyle all the time. And,
right.
And that's why that conversation bothered him so much. Because he was corporate. He was professional. He was, you know, and everything. He just did it his way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people like Kyle's boss, people like the young lady that pulled me aside, the coworker that pulled me aside, I believe, and this is my armchair, to quote Ricky Ricardo, physiatry degree kicking in that I don't have because I never went to school for psychiatry. But as Ricky Ricardo would say, I'm being my armchair physiatrist right now. Right now. But, you know, I think they're jealous. Like, I think they think they're wearing a mask to work every day. I think mm-hmm. they think they're being their version of what black appropriate in corporate America is. And then they see somebody coming in and just living their life very authentically at work. And they're like, but you can't do that. You can't do that.
They think it endangers them.
Right. And I think that's where that comes from, because I can tell you, I had exactly the same experience with Kyle in terms of, I went to my boss,
mm-hmm.
who was a white woman at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so-and-so just pulled me aside. And this black lady that pulled me aside was very well respected, had been there for a bunch of years, like the whole nine. And my boss was like, don't pay attention. Just do a good job. You look fine. Anyway, next, like, and it was and just kind of like.
That's what I have a problem with. I have a problem with the fact that they felt a need to say it. If they were just, if that is just who they are and that's how they operate, then that's fine. You come to work, you want to dress a certain way, you want to look a certain way, you want to appeal to a certain look. That's fine if you are being your authentic self. But I don't think that they were, because if they were, they wouldn't feel the need to talk to you.
That part.
Yeah.
That part. That's what I'm saying. I think they put the mask on,
mm-hmm.
and they can't understand why you don't have the mask.
Right.
The mask on.
How dare you not put your mask on?
Mask on. Right. Don't you know that this is, and it's like, who says that? But I think it's, you know, and no shade to them or anybody else that we're referencing, mm-hmm. but it's like, I think we have to take a look at our inner dialogue with ourselves. Like, whose standard of quote unquote blackness in corporate America are we living up to? As long as I'm not breaking the HR policy or violating the code of conduct and the standards of dress or whatever the case may be at your place of, because your employer has every right, because employment in these United States is at will,
right?
So as long as you're not violating the corporate culture and the guidelines and of, you know,
and as long as the corporate culture and the guidelines aren't violating
you as a person,
my human rights, yes,
right. Well, then you got a lawsuit and you don't need to work there. Like that's a totally different situation. But assuming, we're working in a, professional situation and everything, there's a lot of parameters to be yourself.
Exactly.
Like, I work with people who are orthodox and, where, mm-hmm. Things that honor their religious heritage,
right.
and things like that, culturally, their cultural heritage and stuff like that. And it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, I work with people that I've worked at places that respect and honor, gender identities and all of the things.
Exactly.
and stuff like that. So as a lot, there's a lot of room to be yourself in corporate settings.
There is.
And so I think what I would challenge my good sister who wrote the letter to just, how much of that is storytelling inside your own head and mm-hmm. how much of that mm-hmm. is the corporate culture. And this might not be the job for you. Like she could be working in a very toxic corporate culture.
That could also be a consideration.
And they are out there. But for every toxic corporate culture, there is a culture that values people bringing their whole authentic selves to work.
Yeah.
And so I definitely want to put that disclaimer out there.
I don't want her, I think that there is a natural part of filtering yourself, because that's just being a professional. You're just mm-hmm. not going to say the raunchy stuff at work,
right.
given.
Right.
But to what extent are you filtering yourself? What extent are you hiding your humor? What extent are you second guessing your hair choices? Or reacting the way that you would normally react because of this. So going back to what you said, the internal conversation, I would like to encourage her to let that go.
Exactly. I mean, because how much of that is self-imposed and self-inflicted?
Yeah.
Like you telling yourself this versus the organization telling yourself this.
And something that I think that people will learn over time is that if you continue to be your authentic self, you will grow into whatever successful professional you want to be with your own personality.
1,000%.
Not every person is going to like you for that. Not every person is going to want to support that. But if you are your authentic self, you're not going to have regrets.
And that's okay.
That is okay.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Your mama loves you.
She said, your mama loves you.
And God loves you.
God loves you.
Just the way
you are. And I love you. And I love you.
Just the way you are. So, no, but I mean, I'm trying to bring a little.
I love you just the way you are.
Yeah, shout out to Billy Joel. So, I just. But I mean, I'm trying to introduce a little bit of levity into a very triggering topic.
Yeah.
But I mean that, though, like you have to understand that there's a difference between having the agility to navigate the organizational dynamics that mm-hmm. you're in and bending till you break.
Yeah.
And if you're in a bend till you break situation, then you need to find yourself another situation to be in, right? There are a lot of corporate workplaces that
we stay telling people to go get another job.
but you got to do that internal work, though. You have to separate, like, is this a bad, you know, is it, there was an expression I heard years ago, is it the man or the land? Like, you know, how much of it is you, mm-hmm. like, you know, creating these issues inside your own head because of fear and mm-hmm. expectations or stereotypes or whatever it is? And how much of it is the environment that you're actually in?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you see other people being their authentic selves, walking the hallways and stuff like that in a workplace appropriate way? Like, mm-hmm. there's a balance there.
Yeah.
You know, or are you being more Kyle Barker or are you being more Kyle's boss?
Yeah.
You know, you could find a place to be your own Kyle Barker.
Absolutely. Be your own Kyle Barker. I love it.
That's it.
I think that's how we say it all.
My funny Valentine. Oh, my bad.
I do love when he sings. Nobody sings that song like
that.
Nobody
ruined it for life. And Max, and shout out to Max's napkin in that scene. We're not here to talk about that.
They're not going
to
get that reference. Don't get these kids started.
I know,
they're
right?
not going to get the reference. Then here we go again.
That's all right. Sorry. Shout out to Living Single and the entire cast of Living Single. But I thought it was like the they put that whole dynamic that she is describing in this letter on there. So, but anyway, so.
Yeah.
So to you, too corporate to be free, too black to be neutral, you can be free. You don't have to be neutral, and you can always be your authentically black self, and you could do it in a way that's appropriate to your workplace. And if you need additional coaching or help or whatever, hit us up, you know, on the LizThePurposeCoach.com or DM us or whatever, and we will get you some support that you need. But
any of our viewers, listeners have any comments to add, drop it in our comments and we'll share it back with too corporate to be free.
Yeah.
Too black to be neutral.
But embrace your inner Kyle Barker. So that's today's readout. You've climbed the ladder, checked all the boxes, yet still something's missing. You crave more than just success. You want significance, a career aligned with your purpose. I help corporate women bridge the gap between what they do and who they are. Through transformational coaching, I guide you to gain clarity, align your work with your calling, and lead with confidence and purpose. So whether you're ready for a shift, a breakthrough, or a new beginning, you don't have to navigate it alone. Purpose discovery and activation, leadership and professional development, mentoring and coaching, all designed for high-achieving women ready to do meaningful work. I'm Liz, the Purpose Coach. Let's align your ambition with your assignment. Book your free discovery call today at LizThePurposeCoach.com.
Are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or a brand with an incredible story to tell, but struggling to get the word out? In today's crowded market, getting noticed is tougher than ever. There's been countless incredible businesses with powerful messages that have just gotten lost in the noise. That's where Imagine PR and Marketing comes in. We don't just craft press releases. We become the voice of your brand, meticulously developing and telling your unique story in a way that truly resonates with your audience and gets attention. Ready to transform your brand's visibility? Visit ImaginePRM.com today.
So Liz, to go with that conversation, I thought we'd do something on the fun side.
Okay.
But to give people some examples of characters who never lost their blackness.
Okay. I like where
even though
this is
going. They climbed the corporate ladder.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's called
because,
circle.
Right. Because there are many ways to be black and not feel that you are a sellout.
Exactly.
Instead, let's refer to you as a corporate superhero.
Oh, I love it. Sold outlet. S-O-U-L. Okay, never mind. My bad. Okay. All right. I'm back.
Sold out.
I'm back. Not to be confused with sold.
I know. It's coming.
Okay, that was another right. episode. Okay.
Top 10 characters who never lost their blackness even though they climbed the corporate ladder.
I love it. I love that.
I am going to start with number 10, or I have a bonus one. Should I start with the bonus one first?
Yeah, why not?
She didn't really climb the corporate ladder because when we met her, she was in college.
Okay.
But I'm going to say, I'm going to give you her government.
Okay.
Winifred Brooks.
Winifred Freddie Brooks. Shout out to Hillman. Right. Hillman College. And did she go to Hillman Law School too?
I think she did. I think Freddie was probably the only character that went. Oh, no. She went all the way through the show. She went all the way through the show.
Great choice.
Played by Cree Summer.
Love Cree Summer.
Yeah.
The legendary
But she
Cree
was definitely
Summer.
Her authentic self. She showed up as this quirky character who didn't really understand the culture of Hillman College. And she kind of grew into her own, but she kept her quirkiness
yes.
throughout the show.
She was wonderfully naive.
Yes.
Like
completely.
I saw a lot of myself in Freddie. Like
really?
When she first got to, yeah, because yeah. she had the wild and crazy hair. My hair always did its own, had its own
yeah.
personality
mm-hmm.
and stuff. And, you know, like just wasn't like typically anything, but just was her quirky,
yeah.
creative self and everything. And what I found fascinating about her arc as the show went on was even when she got into her lawyer career in law school and everything, like that season when she came back from the summer in the suit and the
mm-hmm.
straight hair
mm-hmm.
and all of that, all of the things that we were just talking about in the readout letter, like she understood the difference between putting on a mask and just wearing the right uniform for
exactly.
the job.
Exactly. A perfect example of the uniform, you wearing the uniform and the uniform not wearing you.
Exactly. Shout out to Freddie.
So shout out to Freddie, our
fine boyfriend Shazab, but we're not going to talk
yeah,
about him.
That in itself is a story.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
let's go. Number 10, the entire cast of Half and Half.
I love that show.
So we're
Big
talking.
Big Didi was my girl.
Big Didi, Little Didi.
And her wig game was so strong.
Phyllis. And Mona.
I love them. Again, I connected with Mona because Mona was kind of artsy
yeah.
and everything. And Little Didi was
very earthy.
Little Didi was very corporate climbing.
She
like,
was.
You know.
And
driven.
Here's the thing about Little Didi. And of course, Big Didi, that was my girl. Everybody loves her. But Little Didi is the example of someone also who conforms to the uniform, is what we would consider like that corporate style, but is authentically herself.
Yes, she is.
She was herself whether she was at work or whether she was home or whether she was dealing with her mom and her dad.
Exactly.
Or Phyllis and Mona.
Exactly.
She was the same person.
One of the original black female nepo babies on
right,
television.
Exactly.
So shout out to the legendary Essence Atkins, who has been a staple
she
of television. I mean, you talk
been.
About the OG of OG. I mean, she's just,
she's been
you talk
for
about
a minute.
Longevity,
yeah.
resume mm-hmm. 3,500 miles long. Like
exactly.
she has just done everything under
exactly.
the sun. Shout out to her.
But that was definitely an iconic character
100%.
In itself.
Love the cast.
And you may not have always thought of her as the favorite character, but she definitely played someone who was authentically black,
always.
But just not in the way that
always.
Most people think about it.
Always. Every role she's had kind of falls into that.
Yeah.
Love
so,
love
like,
that.
There are different
okay.
ways for you to be black, and
yeah.
Little DD and Big DD was
they
one of them.
Did. Spencer, Mona, like all, yeah, all of them did that.
Exactly.
Love that whole show for that. Shout out to Thelma Hopkins.
Oh yeah, Thelma Hopkins.
Part of Tony Orlando and Dawn. Google it.
And Family Matters.
And Family Matters.
And, a lot of people forget she was the sister in Family Matters.
Yeah, shout out to that whole cast. Legendary, all of them. Shout
good show, Half and Half.
Great show.
Another show that probably a lot of people might not remember, but this was the start of his career, Flex from One-on-One. He played the dad.
Yeah, I love
Do you remember that show?
With Brianna was my girl, and Spirit.
Oh, yes.
That was my, you talk about authenticity and shades of blackness.
I should have said Spirit.
Even the boyfriend.
Well, he wasn't her boy. Well, he did become
her
boyfriend.
Arnaz.
He was
artsy, like kind of quirky, like there was a lot of diversity. There was a lot of black diversity on that show. Even Dwayne, who was my favorite, like Flex's
yes,
best
that's
friend.
Right.
He was so Kelly Perry was so funny as Dwayne. Like, but yes, 100,000%. I love the diversity in that. But Flex Washington, the bad app.
So talk about, you know, the hair thing we had in the conversation or in the readout. Flex, you know, wore his hair in a different way than maybe people might have been used to at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He took on raising his daughter on that show, a single dad.
Yep.
So he had a different perspective about his life and his career.
100%.
And we saw that in the show.
Love it. Love it. Great example.
Number
Great
eight.
Choice.
One of my favorites, Maxine Shaw.
Ride
I'm gonna give you number.
Maverick.
I'm gonna give you number eight and number seven because
okay.
we kind of talked about number seven already.
Okay.
Maxine Shaw and Kyle Bacher, both
them.
From yes. Living Single.
Yes, shout out to Ride the Maverick. Max was wearing micro braids before, like
was.
It was like a cool thing to do. And I love that's the beauty of the whole Living Single show. Like all of them were so diverse and successful in their own ways. But Maxine and Kyle, Max as a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
later turned public defender,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everything, navigating that in her own way. And her authenticity actually got her fired from her job as the lawyer,
but
uncompromisingly herself.
Exactly. There's still success out there, regardless if you're being yourself. And Maxine probably is the closest thing to my personal style or my personal professional image. If I had to tell people what I was like in corporate America,
right.
I'm probably very close to Maxine Shaw.
I think a lot of us see ourselves in Max.
Yeah, absolutely. Classic smartass. That's me for sure.
Because she was herself, but she was but she wore the right uniform, but she was still herself.
She had to be a lawyer. She had to be in court. She had to show up a certain way, but she could still be.
And
authentic.
Even though her authenticity helped to get her fired from the law firm, it also got her it was the same authenticity that got her hired in the public defender's office and got her elected when she was Miss Ride the Maverick running for public office. So that authenticity will always
exactly.
bring you through.
It will grow with you.
Mm-hmm.
Number six, the Jeffersons and the Willises.
Oh.
Louise and Helen.
Yes.
We could probably look at George too, because George was successful.
He was
very much his own person.
He is still George Jefferson from around the way, even when he was at the King of the Empire. But I love the fact that you called out Wheezy and Helen.
Mm-hmm.
Because
these
two ladies, you know, they were from humble beginnings and they moved on up but they were still who they were, like their work at the help center and as volunteers and stuff like that. And they were just you know, they were still who they were, still connected to their community.
And able to navigate in different spaces all while still being themselves.
Exactly.
Because, you know, no one could get down with George the way that, I think we've talked about this in previous episodes, mm-hmm. the way that Helen could, you know,
right.
her blackness was on point
on
all the time.
Point.
Even with her white husband sometimes.
You know, there's that famous meme that makes it when
right.
they're all
with
dancing,
them, with
dancing. With them dancing. Like, that just says it all. Like,
right.
like she can navigate
that
the,
is who she is.
The corporate spaces married
yes.
to her high-powered white husband who
exactly.
was the head of a publishing company
of, yes.
and everything. She could navigate those spaces beautifully, but then she could still mix it, to your point, mix it up with George
exactly.
on the dance floor or verbally or however
exactly.
else she needed to. So
yes.
shout out to them.
So, number five, probably one of my modern faves.
Okay.
The Johnsons from Black-ish.
Yes.
Particularly, well, both of them, because Dre, and I think we've talked about them on a previous show,
mm-hmm.
too. Dre is a high corporate, like a senior level corporate exec in an advertising firm.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo is a physician. And both of them are they're very different, but they are authentically themselves, and they pair very well together.
And they're differently black.
Yeah.
Like, Dre is from, you know, from the hood.
Exactly.
She's straight off of the you know, the Grateful Dead, like, commune.
Right.
You know, she,
I do think
her
that
name,
she was raised
Rainbow.
In a commune.
You know, I mean, I'm saying on the show. Like,
that's what I mean, on the
are,
show.
You know, he's...
Rainbow's parents
and, but they
lived
some,
in a commune.
But, you know, but... Everything about how they navigate their professional spaces on the show is still authentically who they are. And part
Absolutely.
Of the big struggle that they have on the show is, and the whole show is called Black-ish because they're blackity-black in their own individual ways.
Absolutely.
And they want to make sure that their kids are connected to their blackness. So that's
yeah.
a whole... thing that the show kind of
exactly.
wrestles with. So great call out to
and
them.
I think they in as we see the kids grow and step out on their own, I think we see a lot of that come to be.
And their kids teach them
all the time
that
Especially
there's
Dre.
Different that there's different shades of black. Like
yeah.
you could have a son that plays
yeah.
field hockey and he's still black.
I think
Do
Junior
you know I mean?
Is a good example
he's
of
a
it because
example.
He doesn't follow the things that Dre loved as a kid. He's not, you know, big on sports or want to, you know, wear the snazziest stuff
right.
like Dre does. He doesn't have a wall full of sneakers, although I think he like grows into
right.
his style. But he's interested in different things, but he is still his parents' kid. He's
exactly.
still concerned about the things that affect Black America.
Exactly.
And he still wants to do for his community. So
still connected to his
exactly.
blackness or his black identity.
Now, this next one I think is hilarious. Just, I don't know. I hope people remember who Braxton Hartnebrig is.
Love it. Broham. I'm going to get a Braxton Broham
you shirt.
Call
him Broham.
I love you some Braxton Hartnebrig. Come on, come
From
on
the Jamie
now.
Foxx
come
show
on
kids.
Now.
I don't know if
come
you guys
now.
Are familiar with.
Game over. God, shout out to the legendary Christopher Duncan who played him.
Yes.
That is
yes.
one talented, gifted actor who can play. I've seen him in dramas and I've seen him.
Yeah.
do comedy.
Oh yeah.
The man is so gifted and so talented, like, and to play opposite Jamie Foxx and hold his own, like,
he really
Braxton
did.
Was hilarious.
He was so funny, but he was uniquely himself because he was a completely different character.
Completely different character, but blackity black black could mix it up with Jamie, like when Jamie was
go
like
toe to toe. The digs would go back and forth.
Just the bro-hemness of it all, like, says everything that you need to know about Braxton. No, because, you know, he was Mr. Ivy League, but he was still blackity-black at
yeah.
his core and still connected to that. Great, great choice. I don't know who
I
else is on
Braxton.
The list after that. But,
I love Braxton.
But he's
this,
awesome.
What, number three is a
favorite character.
Steady, the Huxtables.
Oh, yeah.
We talk
that's,
about
that's
them.
A given. Set the bar.
Enough said about that. This one is on here for you particularly.
Oh,
number two.
I get one? Okay.
Tom from the Boondocks.
I love the Boondocks.
I know you do.
I got to get like some top tens from the Boondocks or something, or teachable moments from
Boondocks
at a future show. But yes, I love... Okay. The episode where Tom loses his woman to Usher is like legendary. The fact that they name him Tom is hilarious and subliminal. And the irony of all of that is, you know, the original Uncle Tom was actually a figure of abolitionism.
Right.
You know, it wasn't
right.
some like negative stereotype. Somehow it got twisted around and everything. But
as
fast forward, you know, he's married to a white woman, has this beautiful, wonderfully innocent, biracial little girl and everything. But what I love about Tom is always Tom. Like, he's cool. Like, he sees through all the foolishness. He accepts Riley, Huey, Granddad, Ruckus, everybody.
Who they are.
And he, like the episode where he comes over and tells Granddad, like, did you go and talk to Gangstalicious and the guys? The guys are pretty cool. Like, you know, like he could hang with Gangstalicious and, you know, like he's just who he is all the time.
Exactly. See,
and,
I knew she would get that
and
one.
Other people try to clown him for
and
being.
What does he do?
And he's just
shrug
like,
it off.
And he's just who himself. He's 10 toes down on Tom.
Tom knows who he is,
and he is a beautiful representation of, because that character could have been played a whole bunch of other ways.
Correct.
But there's a lot of us that connect with that Tom energy in terms of, you know, being a high-powered professional, being educated, being driven, that whole suburban life in the whole nine, like his subject-verb agreement accent, like here's Huey over here trying to, like, trying to act like, not Huey, Riley's trying to act like he's allergic to education, and here's... At the opposite end of the spectrum, here's Tom with his, but you know what I mean, like trying to be, because he thinks being hood is being black, you know, and then here's Tom, who's this beautiful depiction of educated black excellence before we started throwing that term around and everything, and he's right in the mix and as black as all the other characters on the show in his own wonderful way.
Yeah,
and yeah, shout out.
That's
to,
what we're trying to show. That's what we're trying to say,
shout
like
out,
you can
to
be
Tom.
A Tom,
but this Tom,
not you don't have to be a
but like
Tom,
man, but like,
you can be Tom,
but
and be yourself.
But you know, like Granddad said, well, like the waiter in that scene with the usher couldn't be me though. But you know, but. Some people may say that, but I like Tom.
Hey,
and just the fact
listen,
that he knew the whole song to Let It Burn, and like that's a black man right there feeling his feeling. He's out there in the rain.
But that's the point that we're trying to make.
Exactly.
It's like there's not just one way to be black.
There isn't.
So it might not be you. It's definitely not you.
And Tom isn't the only one that knows all the words to Sarah Smile. I'm just saying.
Well, listen.
I'm just saying. So yeah, shout out to him.
Some...
Thank you for my Boondocks reference.
You're welcome.
Thank you
wherever
for that.
I can.
Because I was
I'm
like, how are you gonna? I was
a Boondocks and a Bugs Bunny reference.
You know, one or the other, right? Like, and I was wondering how you were gonna beat Braxton, but
then
you did that.
I think my number one example of characters who never lost their blackness, even though they climbed the corporate ladder, it's another married couple.
Okay.
And
power couple. I'm loving the power
couple. It's a power couple.
I'm loving the power couple.
And I'm going to say Uncle Phil and
Original Aunt Viv. Yes.
I love Uncle Phil.
Wait.
She brought it back, y'all.
Did I do that right? Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
And I'm going to say, like, from the original sitcom, but also, you still haven't watched the reboot, and I love Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv in the reboot,
check that out.
Too.
Okay.
I really do.
I got it.
They are so good. But I Uncle Phil, original Uncle Phil, is one of my favorite TV sitcom characters because this man was a judge mm-hmm. in high-powered mm-hmm. Los Angeles, mm-hmm. California. Mm-hmm. They lived all out in Beverly Hills, had gained so much notoriety for who they were, but he was still a black man, and they were still reminiscent of like those Philly streets that yep. they came from. Yep. And just representing all everything about how they grew up and who they really were at their core.
Love it.
But
love
could
it.
Also get with whoever from a professional standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Phil could like debate you under the table and he would give it to you straight if you came for him.
But he could also break out Lucille if he had to go to the hood and handle some business.
Right. He could
do the whole thing and still be Uncle Phil.
I love Uncle that. Phil for who he was.
Great choice.
And for what he tried to instill in all of those kids and the support that he had from his very brilliant wife as well.
100%. And I love, you know, like, Aunt Viv, that original Aunt Viv could yeah. go from, you know, teaching the
and
black
no
history
shade,
class.
No shade to Aunt Viv Dupe, but original Aunt Viv is...
Aunt Viv Dupe, that's hilarious. That's funny on a bunch of levels. But she could still go from the professor to, okay, Miss Thing,
right.
you know, whatever.
Right. Exactly.
And I love, too, how they, in the earlier seasons of the show, how they showed, like, the flashbacks to their beginnings when they
right.
first got married,
mm-hmm.
when they brought in their friend from college who's, like, a blackity-black-black
yes.
activist
mm-hmm.
and inspires all the kids to get all militant and everything like that. And they have this beautiful exchange between them around, you know, she's just like, you know, Phil, or I forget, she called Will Hassani, I forget what.
I forget the
or something
name.
Like, I forget what his African name was, but and they go into this whole thing around how she's judging Uncle Phil for not
right.
being, you know, blackity black the way that she's blackity black,
exactly.
and he's just like, and he calls BS on that so beautifully. He's like, it doesn't really matter, you know, we need you in the streets and the boardroom, like
exactly.
I can write a big check for a cause that I'm still fighting the same battle,
yeah.
I'm just fighting it in this lane and you fighting it over here. It doesn't make me any you more black or me less black.
Exactly.
It's all blackity black, and we need to be firing in all of those lanes.
Exactly. And that is a classic or a very good example of what we're trying to say. Like, we can be in all the lanes
exactly.
and we can still be black.
I love it. Speaking of black, Strange on the top 10.
All right, that's all we got for today, Liz.
That's all we got for today. If you stayed to the end, please like, subscribe, share on Spotify, YouTube, or all your favorite channels and platforms, and support us by shopping the store at lizthepurposecoach.com/store and on my TikTok page where we have our brand new TikTok shop. And with that, thank you for tuning in. And we'll see you in the next episode.